Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whenever you're listening. This is the Fool's Folly Podcast. Hello, and welcome back to the Fool's Folly Podcast. All of our dear listeners, we're so sorry we missed a full month of entertainment for you. We went away for 2 weeks.
We missed
a whole month of stuff. We're sorry, but we were very busy. There are reasons that happened, of which we will get into.
we had to go do adult things.
We had to go and do a job.
We had to go and do a job.
We had to work as a theatre organisation.
We did
a proper thing. Which, as I say, we'll get into a little bit in the episode. I guess the first thing we really want to talk about is a couple of changes that we're going to make to the podcast. So, first things first is the Fool's Folly Podcast isn't going anywhere. We're still going to be doing 2 episodes of content every single month that everyone can listen to in all the usual places that you can find it. The difference being is Darren and I, we sort of made the decision after we sort of finished working this last month that the Roundup show doesn't really work in the way that we want it to.
No.
It's a really difficult show to actually make.
It's really difficult to make that show as a long-form show engaging.
Yeah.
Because it is essentially what's on. And you are basically listening to lots of little adverts and we're really enthusiastic about everything.
And I think that's a difficulty is we really wanted to do it because of all the cool stuff that's going on that you might sometimes miss. But it logistically, it's really difficult to put on because you have to get hold of all these people to find out what their program is and then put it on. And unfortunately, I don't think it's an entertaining product. So that's, I guess, one of the biggest changes. That show is going away. But Connor, I hear you cry. What will take the place of the Roundup episode? Thank you very much. So this is an audio podcast and Darren decided to mime what was happening.
I feel you can hear a mime.
You can hear a mime. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, is that what you...
hear the mime.
This is my Connor. So, but I hear you describe what's going on in that place. So the guest show is not going away. That's still saying it is. So every single month we're going to have a show with a guest. We're going to bring them on, talk about exactly like we would normally, but talk about what they love, what they do, what they've got going on, get really nerdy with it, get into the nitty gritty and those details. What's going to replace the Roundup show is just another episode of the Fool's Folly podcast, but instead of having guests, it's just going to be the Fool's Folly. It's going to be Darren and me. Occasionally with the other member of Fool's Folly, Jess Barrett, I guess. We'll potentially be on sometimes.
We might be able to blackmail her to create space in her busy schedule.
And that's what it's going to be. So those are the changes, sort of 2 of the big changes that we're making. The other change is that we've decided that we're not going to censor ourselves anymore. Not that we really were. Neither of us cursed particularly badly. Censor ourselves.
So, we're not doing that.
No.
Thank fuck for that.
So,
brilliant.
Because it became... So, Darren and I, we don't swear loads, but we do swear, and suddenly... Having to edit those out sometimes when actually how organic that conversation is, it gets a bit awkward and annoying. And I don't want to bleep it, even though bleeping sometimes is really funny. I just think it's a bit of a pain, so we're just going to mark it as explicit going forward. So, Darren.
Yes, mate.
What have we done? What are we doing? Why have we been away? Why have we been gone?
We went and worked on a big festival.
So, Loop of the Loop Season 12. So, the last episode of the podcast, obviously, we had the amazing ladies of Loop of the Loop come and sit down and talk to us.
Should definitely go back and listen to.
If you haven't done it already, please.
Even though the festival's been and gone, there's loads of stuff in that podcast that's still...
Yeah, because it talks about who they are as well. And obviously, Loop of the Loop's not going anywhere, even though this is sort of the last festival in its current framework. But that's what we did. Yeah. So we've worked for and with Loop in the Loop kind of for a long time now. So we've known all of those guys for about 6 years now. And we sort of, you know, we did a lot of stuff with them before. You may have seen some of their sort of the daft stuff they do. They do a lot of street theatre, and that's primarily where we have worked for a long time with their We Are Nearly Normal street theatre team. You might have seen them out and about. And if you have, chances are you've probably seen Darren or I in one of those scenarios.
Yeah, most likely. Yeah.
So we've known those guys for a long time, and then we sort of started helping a little bit more. We got a little bit more involved during season 11, and we did a little bit more stuff, and they kind of approached us and said, would we kind of want to help?
And we approached them as well. I think that's important to say, you know, we weren't headhunted as
it was
really wanted to get involved.
Yeah, it was because it's a different aspect.
Give back to an organisation that had done a lot for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was the main thing. So we came on board as associate producers from January until the festival.
So we are...
And then the festival happened and God, didn't the time go quick?
Big Brother Tuesday, really
didn't
quick.
It just, it felt, absolutely January felt like we had this meeting and there was loads of time and then suddenly
it was
happening.
It was
again.
Happening, it was right on top of you. And I guess that's an allegory for probably how life as well.
No, but isn't that the thing? Every project,
yeah.
No matter how early you start, the time will go.
That's the thing, quick. Isn't it?
Because obviously one of the reasons also why we took such a break is, personally, I went from the festival...
Straight into another.
Pretty much straight into another project.
Yeah.
The Big Youth Theatre project. And those projects, that's for the kids I work with, it's 5 months of their life by the time they got the script to the show. But it's a year of mine.
Really, yeah.
Really,
you're kind of always planning and doing.
From planning, writing, having that. So it's a year that those shows are in my head, and that year goes so quick.
Yeah. It is incredible how sort of quickly the time passes and things like that. You always sort of think, you know, when you are younger and your parents sort of say to you, oh, you know, time will go quickly. You know, as soon as you hit a certain age, it's going to go so much quicker. And you're like, yeah, shut up. Shut up. It's
you
not.
You get really
and
cocky.
Then, and then all of a sudden, I'm now looking like, you know, we're nearly halfway through 2019 and it just feels like it's just disappeared. It's so strange. It's so strange how time just completely vanishes. And I guess it makes, and it's why, you know, it's great to be able to do stuff like this, to kind of document what happens and what's going on and things like that. I'd be able to look back and go, God, I was doing that 6 months ago and I was doing that 5 months ago.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's incredible. What sort of happened and what happened in those few months? Because you get really, it's really easy to remember kind of all the naff stuff that happened and the shit stuff that happened.
Yeah.
And you don't realise how much good stuff you did in that time.
But you say that.
Well,
and also there's
that was
a
really eloquent, Connor, nice one.
No. you are right. But I mean, one thing I think I've noticed more this year than any other year is that I think in the midst of a project, you really notice the stuff that's going badly.
Mm.
And that's the thing that can really stress you out. And then as long as the project overall goes well, then in your memory that project has kind of rose-tinted spectacles and you kind of forget all the naff stuff that happened. And then if it goes naff, and that's because that's the thing that's kind of emblazoned in your memory. So, you know, I always find a youth theatre show stressful.
Yeah.
Because it's a big old project and there just aren't enough of us.
Yeah.
You know, it's run by myself and Jess. And it's two people to put on a production and to marshal people and do publicity and marketing material. And that's a lot. So it can feel very, very stressful. And when things aren't going quite smoothly, you know, this year, and every year you kind of go, oh God, is this the year that we fuck it up, basically?
Yeah.
Is this the year that it goes wrong and then this is the one that done? And then when it goes well, and I'll have to remind myself that this process happens every year.
Yeah.
And when it inevitably, you know, goes well, because we've put the work in, then you look back on everything with a really...
A bit positive, of a reverence and
bit,
things like
that. A bit
like
of
that,
reverence,
yeah.
You know, because then, you know, in the midst of doing this project and doing actually working the loop in the loop, when things were getting stressful, you look back to the other projects you've done and gone, why isn't it going like that?
Yeah.
And you never forget, you never remember the shit.
The shit that happened there. Yeah.
You just don't.
It's tough,
right?
Yeah. It's because I think it's always tough to measure your success. It's always easy. I think just I won't speak for the entirety of people, but I know I am. I'm really hard on myself, and I always forget the things that I've done well, and I tend to only remember the bad things. We were sat in an evaluation for the end of the season, season 12 of Loop of the Loop Festival the other week, and being able to talk about what I wanted to change with what I did within the festival was really easy. Talking about what I did well, I found difficult. I found really hard because it's easy to talk about what you want to change, but it's important though. It is important to talk about those things as well.
You do, but it's the it's the natural human thing, and I don't know if it is. That's probably lazy generalisation, but it feels the negative stuff gets. So it's the thing, if you do a show and 100 people say it was great and one person says it was crap, you really want to know why they thought it was crap, right? And you don't focus on the fact that 99 people said it was good.
Yeah. I also don't want to fall into the trap talking about it now is talking about all the stuff that went wrong as well. I think we will talk in a minute about kind of all the real actual joy we had. And we're not saying actually, this process was really brilliant.
Oh, actually, it was amazing. It was amazing.
So Darren and I got to look after, so when we were originally at this meeting and at kind of the early stages of sort of the planning and the festival things like that, the guys from Loop in the Loop turned around to us and we ended up basically taking on the producer role for an entire production.
Yeah, delivery.
That was being torn down as part of their sort of connection with Battersea Arts Centre. So we got to do a show for babies. A show for 6 to 18 month year olds called Kaleidoscope, which was turned out to be amazing.
Wasn't it wonderful?
I say turned out to be because I was a little bit unsure about what framework that would take until I actually got in the room and got to see it. And it was such an interesting experience, an experience that I had never had. Show for babies. So it was, 6 to 18 month year olds, and the show was a multi-sensory performance with
colored lights and
lights,
objects,
sounds, sign language. It was amazing.
It was
so amazing.
Really well
I got done. Really emotional. I got really, the first couple of times I saw it, I got really, really emotional. And I got a real sort of like, oh my goodness, man.
There was a moment, because we watched, do you remember we watched the recording of it?
Yeah.
And even, we got into it, and obviously, because it's not for us.
No.
And it's not even, because we don't have children, it's also not for us.
Yeah.
The fact that we haven't got a small human that we can share this thing with and have that bonding.
Yeah, we haven't got.
So we were just watching it as two adults in their 20s. And we were like kind of getting into it. But there was a moment when it started for the first time watching it live and seeing people react to it, where there was that moment of, oh, I get it.
I completely get this thing now. Yeah. And I did, I got really emotional.
It fundamentally, really but also emotional. What that show did, I don't know about you, but it fundamentally did challenge some previously held beliefs I'd had as a theatre maker as well.
I
thought the show was brilliant, and it didn't quite make me want to
make that theatre.
No, I don't think that's my skill set, and it's not something I currently anyway would want to do. But it made me really, because I thought, if we're being really brutally honest, there was part of me that thought, before that show came and I saw it, is this just a gimmick?
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Is this show going to be based on a gimmick, which is some lights change and babies go, ah.
Yeah.
And is that the show? And it wasn't. It allowed parents and kids to bond to do this interactive thing and have this performance and react to it. And it didn't actually felt gimmicky at all.
No. And I hate to bandy the term around, but it felt quite special because I'd never seen anything like it before.
Yeah.
And to watch sort of mothers and fathers and all carers of these children interact as a collective, as a group, was it was magical. And I got really emotional. I'm an emotional sop, though, to be fair. That's one of my things. I get a bit emotional about lots of these things. But it made me really appreciate that art form and how difficult that must be, actually, as well, to make that show.
But the Thursgate Theatre are...
Oh, they're brilliant, yeah.
They're brilliant. Great. But all the shows this festival were...
All the shows were great, yeah.
Were
the
great.
Whole thing... There yeah, was, my experience... I'm just talking about my experience of
yeah.
Of Kaleidoscope, because obviously it's what we did, and that's kind of what we did on it. But yeah, the whole festival went really well. And we didn't fuck it up. I was quite happy. I never felt like we actually really fucked it up. You know? I never... Because there was a moment...
No, I don't think we did, no.
There were moments I was worried that, like, am I completely ruining this festival, particularly this show?
Oh, I felt a big... I'm glad, I don't think we've actually had this conversation. I did feel a real sense of... I felt like, which is... I think this is a good metaphor, given what we saw. I felt like I was looking after someone else's child.
Oh, totally. I know exactly what you mean.
And it was like, don't... It didn't feel like I was looking after my child.
Yeah.
And maybe that's wrong, but I had a sense of I'm kind of just this custodian of this very precious thing that belongs to someone else.
Yeah.
And I can't break it.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I can't drop the baby.
You can't drop the baby. I was about to make the same analogy. Yeah, you can't drop the baby.
You know.
It did very much feel like that. It very much felt like...
And I very much worried about dropping the baby.
Yeah. Because we'd never done it, right? And that's, I think, why... We've never done anything like that before, and you don't want to. But those guys, they had so much faith in us, which was so.
It was really brilliant. Nice. It was really nice, and I think what we agree, you know, one thing we probably think we should have done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we probably didn't take or understand how much ownership we probably had over the delivery of that project, and probably should have.
Clarified that,
and then really taken that ball and run with it.
Yeah.
But that, you know, when it's your first time and you kind of don't know, you don't really know where those barriers are and what that is, and that's fine. And we'd know for next time.
Yeah. And like I say, it's a matter of hindsight and that kind of thing as well.
Exactly. And that's the point of why you do a review, right?
Yeah, that's why you change it. But yeah, the whole festival was amazing. Juliet and Romeo was brilliant, was absolutely exceptional.
Can I just say, I am... you might cut this, I don't know. But if we're going full on, I can A, swear, and B, maybe we go full slaw. I really like that there was this festival. Every show I can genuinely, on a public forum, say I liked.
Yeah.
And that show in particular, Juliet and Romeo, because I think that show in particular had been hyped up so much.
It had been, yeah.
Because all the other producers had seen it.
They'd gone on a road trip, hadn't they?
Seen it at Folkestone, and they just came back and they were raving about it and raving about it. And it's that thing of... It's really bad, actually. It's that thing of... I think when enough people go, this thing's great, and you kind of go, is it great? Is it really great? I'm going to find a thing. And I'm going to be the cool person who goes, you know that thing that you all love? I don't love it.
I didn't love it.
I'll be the person. I loved it.
It was exceptional.
It won me from the word.
It was absolutely exceptional.
Go.
It was so hilariously funny and so well put together and so brilliant, and they're so good and so talented. God, to be that talented.
But, you know, and it was a thing to remember, it was a dance show.
It was a dance movement piece.
But also, I mean, what is great, actually, when you think about the concept of that show, everyone I've explained it to does find it funny.
It's a funny concept. So the concept of it, I think we probably talked about it before, is... So basically it's Juliet and Romeo is a story about if those two characters didn't die at the end of Shakespeare's play, what kind of would happen. And it's basically 40 years later, they're in couples counselling and it's not really going well. And it was kind of brought into the modern day a little bit, but then also kind of taking elements from the play and things like that as well. Mm. But yeah, it was just.
But you explain that. That basic thing to anyone, and then people just smile.
Yeah, because it's funny.
I explained it to you, and I hope you won't mind me mentioning it. I was having it, the last time I bumped into Dan Shepherd, I was having a chat with him, and I said we were doing this, and he self-admittedly, well, as am I, was not someone who would naturally go to a dance show.
No.
And I said it's imagine Romeo and Juliet, but it's 20 years later, and they didn't die, and they're in couples counselling. Mm. And he,
20 years later, not 40.
So 20 yeah. years later. And he just had the biggest... He couldn't help it. Had it's a funny. Smile on his grip face. And it is funny.
It's just funny. It was brilliant. And yeah, I think you're right. It's like, you know, because I'm not either. I'm not a person who would normally connect to dance pieces. But it was just... It was brilliant. It was funny. It was so well put together. But yeah, Kaleidoscope, Juliet and Romeo. What was the other Battersea show?
Yes.
Oh, Now Is the Time to Say Nothing. I cried in that as well. I cried a lot.
And that was another one, a little bit like Kaleidoscope, where I thought it could verge on being gimmicky.
Yeah.
Because, so for those, I think, again, Ellie James gives a really good explanation about it in the Loop episode, which you should definitely go back and listen
plug,
to.
Plug.
But it was an audio, but anyway, it was an audio and visual installation in Turner Contemporary, and basically you went into the room in which everything was held. There were 12 armchairs in the end, wasn't there? 12 armchairs in a circle, and you sat in an armchair. There was a small TV monitor in front of you and some headphones, and you put the headphones on, and then the video started to play, and you got your experience, and it was about this project between Reem Carsley, who's a Syrian refugee
and documentarian,
and Caroline Williams, and the students
of the Young Vic.
Yeah, so it documented that her journey, wasn't it,
and through
the project that they had done.
Yeah.
With the kids at the Young Vic, who I think over a span, like it really went over a span of time, didn't it? Like those kids grew up.
A long period of time, yeah.
By the end of it.
Yeah, so I think at the end, spoilers, but at the end of the installation, you get a little conversation between Reem and the kids of the Young Vic. And I think it was sort of like, I think early on they talk about sort of being like 15, 14, 15. And the last conversation you hear, or one of the last conversations you hear between the two of them, is they were sort of, you know, 18, 19. Yeah. So it's obviously spanned over a long period of time. But it was just brilliant, and it was powerful, and it was moving, and it was gut-wrenching. And there's a particular part sort of in the middle that just devastated me.
Mm.
Completely devastated me. Yeah, and I cried at that. So.
Yeah.
And then we had two homegrown shows as well. Well, three technically, if you count, because we kind of missed, I guess, the stuff we did over the Bank Holiday weekend as well.
Oh,
so we had three sort of homegrown shows, all sort of developed either by Loop in the Loop or in partnership with them.
Yeah.
So Bindlestick Theatre had a show which was all of the
history plays, Shakespeare's history plays
in an hour, and that was sort of, you know, a show for kids, and that was brilliant and that was funny.
I mean, I didn't get to see it because I had to sit on front of that. I heard it was good.
Yeah.
It was through the door where I was, I could hear the laughter.
I was sort of behind the cafe bar area, and at one point did nearly get seen by the audience and had to sort of duck out the way because I was sort of sat at a, not a dumb waiter, what do you call that? It's like a, the window.
Oh, yeah, it's like a window.
It's like a window into the kitchen area. And that, I didn't realise that was going to be opened at one point, and I just had to like duck underneath the bar to sort of avoid being seen. Mm. But hey, there you go. And that was really good. Yeah, that was really funny.
And then it was Julie's World in the...
Julie's World in the evening on the same day on that Sunday, which was, yeah, that was really, really funny. And I only got to see half of that because there was a power cut halfway through that show. Oh, God.
Can I... So, genuinely...
Yeah.
I thought that was part of the show.
I know you did, yeah.
Because... well, also, because I thought... So, it happened. So, we're 10 minutes... I think it's 10 minutes in. 10 minutes in.
10, 15, if 10, that, 15 yeah.
minutes in. The lights go black. And it really... Because it really made sense for that character that would happen. She's doing this big talk in front of an audience and the lights would go. I thought it was brave... And I'm sat there going, well, I mean, we're going to do 10 minutes in the dark, are we? Interesting. Great. Even when someone got up,
Ellie, the director, who's
calling the show, got up and said, this has happened. What, I thought that was part of the show. Because because at that point I was off front of house and I was sat with a drink and I was watching and I'd go, well... And because Ellie had kind of had a speaking part in the previous show as well, I thought, oh, we're just doing this again. So I thought, okay. There even got to a point where certain members of the team were kind of nervously running around. I thought, oh, everyone's in on this. And I'm not. And I go, well, I mean, fair play. Maybe I missed a meeting. Because then Julie carried on doing her talk and got people to... light their phones and light her like the stage and started phones, singing a song on the guitar. And I thought, well, this is part of the show.
Yeah, it was funny.
I wouldn't have
known. It was mortifying, but also a little bit funny, I guess, in hindsight. And then you did Stage Fright.
Then I did Stage Fright.
You kind of literally the week after the end of the festival.
Yeah, pretty
week
much.
After?
Pretty
2 weeks after.
2 weeks after. Straight from one, straight into another. Yeah. I'm knackered now.
I'm sure you are.
Like the last few days in particular.
You've been really feeling it.
Well, I've been really feeling it. It's not even just a case of physically feeling it. Physically feeling it, I can get over, you know, you kind of get through. It's mentally.
Mm.
You know, particularly then if you go to a meeting. And that's the thing, because like, I kind of hate it when I feel like that. Going to a meeting and people come to you for your opinion and I have to go, I don't really know because my mind's not really there.
Because I'm literally drawing a blank
because I don't know what to do. And I'm in an odd place where for the first time in about 3 years, I don't immediately know what the next one is.
The next thing, yeah.
The next thing is, and I'm not thinking about it and I don't know what that next thing is, and I've been very used to...
Kind of coming out and starting almost immediately again.
Well, also, it's that thing of usually what happens is I get bored within 2 days of having done the show.
Yeah.
And then I want to do another one. And because the thing is, ideally, in my head, you know, I'd have 2 days and I'd almost go back into production week, but just with another show at the end.
Another show, yeah. Be great.
And not the year.
Not the year run, you've got it, yeah.
Because that's the only thing I find about the process that has to happen at the youth theatre. And probably most people who work in participation get this, because you're working with school kids as well and you have to put it around turn time. Those projects sort of drag out.
They do, yeah, they're a bit.
And, you know, really, for a show, if it's scripted, 3-4 weeks.
Mm.
And that's kind of a luxury, most places.
Excuse me.
2 weeks. to put a show together, but really intensely. And
yeah, two weeks
up on its feet.
Yeah, 2 weeks is normally, you know, I remember being at school and talking to a couple of different production companies that would come into schools and things like that, and they would like, yeah, their rehearsal period was over 2 weeks. Obviously, they would write it up to, but their rehearsal period was over sort of 2 weeks, and then they would perform it. then kind of for like the next 6 months.
And unfortunately, well, and then you kind of work it out in performance as much as anything.
Yeah, a little bit. But I think that's why you put a strong team together and you make sure that what you're doing is you're able to kind of work it out in the room a little bit as well and get it up on its legs a bit.
Yeah, and that's the thing I sometimes struggle with in the current model in which I work is that particularly the writing, you don't get loads of time for writing and rewriting.
Mm. Oh yeah, true. Because you haven't really got time to get up on its legs that much, I guess.
No, it's not like I can take it somewhere and. Well, I could actually. I'm saying like I probably could, but you don't really get the opportunity to really like scratch it and to hear it out loud loads before you've got to your deadline of that you need to deliver it in order to start putting it together. And that's and sometimes what I sometimes feel like is one of those novelists that just churn out a novel every year. Like this is my new crime novel. This is like my cookie cutter crime novel.
Yeah,
that's gonna sell lots of copies, but. You know, I never want to get to like that. So I don't know about you, actually. It'd be quite nice to have this discussion. So Quentin Tarantino is very much about his filmography.
Yeah.
And he's always saying, I've got 10 films. And
I've got 10 films
and that'll be it. And it's like my perfect filmography.
What's the next? What's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? It's be 9. Or will that be 10?
I think that's nine. I think that's.
But he also does make one film every 5 or 6 years, though.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm big on the equivalent of whatever my filmography would be.
Yeah.
And I split it up into categories. So the three shows I've done at the Youth Theatre at the moment, Frankenstein, Screwloose, and Stage Fright. I see them as a trilogy because tonally, even though Frankenstein is very different, and I'd really did go the dramatic route with that and really played on that. There were certain comedic beats and certain comedic elements to that that kind of make it the kind of adopted brother or sister of the other two. And you can see a shift. And the last two are very clearly like...
Yeah.
There are things that really link them. If I was going to do another one, I wouldn't want to make it part of the four. Like it's now a four.
Right, okay, sure.
It's got to be we're starting either a new thing or it's his own thing there. And I look at that for everything.
Mm.
I'm really nerdy about certain things. I want to do, if I can, I'll do things in threes.
Well.
It's that thing of, can I do one play? Can I do two plays? Can I do three plays in this place or
Yeah, or is not? That the
and
thing?
Once I've got the three, I don't care, but it's not a huge thing if I don't do another one.
Sure. My thing is, I do feel like, because particularly with music, what I like with music is there's a couple of particular artists who definitely, they have like almost like three unique styles that they explore during their albums.
Yeah.
If you go listen to George Watsky's last album, which is called Complaint, there are three really unique voices inside those, and actually three really unique stories with inside sort of the first three, second three, and the back three things. I really like the idea, because what that does is it... It's weird to say because not everything's always linked in that way, but it's like beginning, middle, end.
Yeah.
It's that same story beat that you're hitting it almost every time. I really like that. I like that idea and I like the concept of that. In practice, you never know how it's going to work, but yeah.
It's not always practical, but
I do understand what you mean.
It's really, but also it's that thing, it's what I wouldn't want to do in anything, whether it's participation work or professional work, is to do... I have a certain direction in which I like to work, and I have certain scopes within which I like to work, and I have certain ethoses that I think are really important, and certain things I really want to champion, and that's currently, and I'm aware that they may very well and probably will change as time goes on, but that within that you are trying to grow. And to not just do the same thing.
Oh no, I totally agree.
In a different guise and all the time.
I see what you mean. Yeah, well, you've always got to grow, haven't you? You've always got to move on to bigger and better things. Like we were talking about earlier, you know, like with this festival that we've just done, is you know, if we're asked to come back again, and if we do go back again. We probably wouldn't do if we go on as producers, we probably wouldn't produce together this time. Because that would be redundant. We've done that now. We kind of learned the ropes a little bit together. Well, next time we take that experience we did when we were working together.
Yeah, you may as well.
And then you go off and we do something else, but we do it individually. It is always nice, however, to be able to bounce off of someone, but not saying that you still couldn't do that.
You couldn't do that. It
just changes that dynamic. And the problem is everyone thinks we come as a pair, so...
Well, yeah,
exactly. We're always recognised the pair, to the point where, like, if we turn up at meetings and we either don't turn up at the same time, or, like, one of us happens not to be there, it's, like, a big deal. Well, just always like, oh, it's really funny.
Yeah, and it's to the point where you'll turn up and they'll go, where's Connor? Or where's Darren? And you go, well...
We are... It's not like...
Cheers!
Like,
hello, by the way. Thanks, you two.
The first thing they say. Because it's not like... Obviously, we have been friends for a long time, so I understand it. But it's not like we like live together. We don't. It's not like we're with each other every day. It's just it's funny to me that they're like we're like a package deal. It is funny to me.
But I'm gonna start doing it. I'm gonna start doing it to them. one of them turns up and someone else is not there. Yeah. The first question I'll ask is
where's X?
Yeah.
Where's this person?
Where's X? See how that goes.
I guess on that note, that's gonna be the episode. Hopefully there was some interesting and entertaining stuff in there somewhere, in and around the conversations we had. But again, so I guess tweet at us at We Are Your Fools. Follow us on Instagram. It's just fools_folly. Email us at foolsfollytheatre@gmail.com. Even if you just want to sound off and say how much you like the show. Because of, I think I've said it before, but because of where...
Pretty much only if you want to sound off and like the show.
Because at the moment we have no way to... Because of where we host the podcast, we've got no way to have direct feedback from anyone if they want to leave any comments. So if you do, just email us or tweet us or do anything like that. The next episode of the Fools Folly podcast is going to be on the 7th of June, and that is going to be one of our guest episodes. So just keep an ear out for who that guest is going to be, and then we're going to shout about it all the way too. But thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Fools Folly podcast. As always, we have been your fools...
Darren Hill,
Connor Maud, and thank you very much. We'll see you later.
Bye, friends.
Bye.